Welcome to the Negotiations Ninja podcast, where we develop and deliver the most engaging negotiation content and training in the world. We host negotiation experts, business people, and entrepreneurs, and discuss what works, what doesn't work, and how we can improve our negotiation skills. Hey, listeners, thank you so much for joining me. You've got Mark here. This is the Negotiations Ninja podcast. Today, my amazing guest is Dr. Mark Golston. He is a former FBI and police hostage negotiation trainer and psychiatrist with a focus on suicide prevention for 25 plus years. And none of his patients have died by suicide. A lot of people can say that, by the way. He is the author of 9 books, count it, 9, with his book, Just Listen, which is the number one listening book on the planet, translated into 26 languages. And I can tell you, having read it and having read his other book, Real Influence, his writing is fantastic, like really, really, really good. And if you want to understand influence at a deep level, he's the guy that you need to listen to. He's the inventor of surgical empathy, which is basically this approach of connecting to the deepest parts of people. And when he asks a question, I don't know what happens, but all of a sudden, emotions bubble to the surface. How he asks questions is incredible. And we're going to get into that in today's episode. You're going to be able to take away exactly how to do what he does. Enjoy this amazing episode with Mark Golston. Mark Golston, we're here. How are you?
I'm well, although I must say I'm in the epicenter of COVID in the world in Los Angeles, but I'm doing pretty well.
Well, I hope you're safe. Are you okay?
I'm safe, but it's like living in a science fiction movie, but I always like science fiction, so we'll see. And if the Martians land and take us away and vaccinate us, we'll be good.
Now would be a good time, right? Like now would be a good time for the Martians to land. I feel like if there was enough craziness and they were waiting for an opportunity to strike, this would be the time.
I think if the Martians land and looked at us, they'd say, pass.
Just pack up and decide to leave. Amazing. Okay. Well, I've got a lot that I want to cover today. I'm a big fan of your work. So I'm trying to contain the questions that I have. We may have to do a part two. But before we get too deep into it, maybe you could give the listeners a bit of background as to who you are and what you do.
You know, it's interesting because one of the things that I teach, and I spoke in Moscow along with a Nobel Prize winner a year ago, a fellow named Daniel Kahneman. He wrote a book called Thinking Fast and Slow that many people know about. And what I taught in Russia was if you can focus on what people are listening for, not what they're listening to, but on what they're listening for, and you get it without their telling you, and you deliver on it, they won't just give you their mind, they'll give you everything. So as you're talking and I'm thinking of the audience that you describe, I'm imagining that what they're listening for is they want to be more effective as negotiators. In fact, they're listening for some negotiations that did not go well, and they don't want to have that repeat itself because negotiations that don't go well often cause us to beat up on ourselves. And I think what they're listening for is, can he give us tools and tactics that are immediately doable by us? We'll be open to reading whatever he's written, but we're not here for a big upsell. We're here to get immediate value. And some of us, as we're listening to this, have a negotiation today that we're a little unsure of. And so we're looking for something that can give us more confidence. So do you think I've read that accurately?
I think you read that perfectly.
And then the next thing they're listening for is, okay, that was pretty good guest of Mark. So why should we listen to you? And so what people listen for is, so what's your credibility? And it's interesting, you know, because I've taught negotiation all over the world. And a lot of times they'll say, so, you know, you're not a business guy. Why should we listen to you? And this is what I'd say. I remember one company I'm in front of and I say, I need to tell you this, because as soon as they see I'm a doctor, not just a doctor, a psychiatrist, they figure, oh, this guy's going to be really convoluted and just full of hot air. And I even told the people who booked me, why'd you have to put that I'm a psychiatrist on the poster? You know, I got 2 strikes on me already. And I said, you know, as I'm speaking to you, I will tell you this. This is a pretty top company and your top people. I would say the least earner in the room makes five times more than I make in my best year. So they're looking at each other like, why the heck should we listen to you? And then I'll say, and to be honest, I've never sold what you sell. So they're thinking, what is he doing? And I said, but in my career, I was a suicide specialist for 25 years. None of my patients died by suicide. I've occasionally had to talk to families about how to talk to their drug-abusing, psychopathic kid and get him to sort of cross over back into health. And I've even had to talk to couples who hadn't slept in the same bedroom for 5 years to have sex. So I know a little bit about persuasion. I think you can tell that had them.
Not to mention, you have the number one best-selling book in the world on listening. Your book, Real Influence, has just been amazing for me. And you've written a bunch of other things as well. So, I mean, your pedigree definitely speaks for itself.
Well, you know, it's interesting. My book, Just Listen, is in 27 languages. And as I said, I spoke in Moscow, I've spoken in India, I've spoken in Canada and England. But a lot of times, I can't get arrested in America to teach listening because Americans want to be listened to. They often don't want to listen. And maybe we can dive in because I wrote an article, and Just Listen is about empathic listening. It's not just about understanding people. It's about causing them to feel felt by you. And I wrote an article recently about the fear of empathy, the fear of empathizing with others. And it was actually, I think, for a business publication. And I said, a lot of negotiators or a lot of salespeople have a fear of really getting where the other person's coming from, because if you really discover where they're coming from and what they need and want, and that doesn't match what you have, you're not going to be able to sell them. But then what happens is by pushing too hard, you drive them away and lose the sale anyway. I just got off another interview and I gave them a soundbite because hopefully there'll be a few soundbites that people can hold on to. And the soundbite was, there's a famous Freudian term where id is let ego be, and id is impulsivity, and ego is not the ego in the current terms. Ego is being thoughtful. And so in this other program, I said, where agenda is, let curiosity be. Why? Because when you come at someone with an agenda, you're pushing them to have to agree with you. But when instead you go at them with curiosity, you're creating a space where they can choose to agree with you.
I want to dive into that because I feel like that is probably one of the biggest areas, especially in North America, where we get stuck because we come in when we start the influencing framework or we start our whatever strategies or tactics we have to influence. It's influence with the intent of getting to a desired endpoint instead of just curiosity. And I feel like that oftentimes hampers the, or at least hamstrings the potential or possibility of what may come out if you were curious. What would you say to that?
I'd say you're right on. And in fact, when I speak to younger people, I say, you know, the more aggressive you are, the more desperate and hungry you come off to very wealthy people. I remember I had lunch because I love helping younger people. And some years ago, I had lunch with a 30-something young man and a 30-something young woman. And I think he sold insurance or whatever. And he immediately started pitching, you know, and started asking her questions about her background. And I listened. And then afterwards, I took him aside and I said, you took a training course, didn't you? He said, yeah. He said, why do you ask? I said, you know, when you ask questions to someone about their background, where they came from, it's a good idea to care about the answer. And I say, I talk to billionaires, and it doesn't have to be a billionaire. I am telling you, a multimillionaire would pick up that you took a course and you're trying to maneuver them. And by the way, they were great questions. I even noticed some of them, but you need to care about the answer. And now he was coming from a place of, look, people have to make their numbers. Here's another quote. I'll share some of my favorite quotes. One of my deceased mentors, I was fortunate, I had seven mentors, but they've all passed away. And one of my mentors was a key executive under Lou Wasserman. Lou Wasserman was a big icon at Universal Television and movies. And my mentor said that, you know, one of Lou's favorite quotes, and this totally fits Bill Gates, is first you get on, then you get honest, then you get honors. But first you have to get on. And getting on, you know, when we're anxious and we need to close and we need to make our numbers, it can create a certain anxiety, and anxiety can cross over into being pushy. And again, with other people who are parallel to you and they're anxious also, maybe that pushiness can come off as enthusiasm. But the more you're trying to negotiate and sell to people who've been around the corner a few times, the more they're going to feel you're coming off as too hungry and too grabby.
In your book, Just Listen, one of the things that you speak about in your nine basic rules is to rewire yourself to listen. And so I think this really ties in nicely to what you just said, because I feel like a lot of us are, we feel maybe it's self-imposed or corporate imposed, but these pressures to perform around sales or negotiation or whatever it is, and that hampers us, like you mentioned. And it almost sounds like we need to change the way that we think about that. So how could we rewire ourselves to listen so that when we potentially are speaking to or influencing those people that whose money or services we might need, how do we get them to make them at least feel as though we care? How do we care? I should start that.
Well, it's interesting. And I love the way you said that, because people generally don't do what's important to them. They do what they care enough about.
Right.
It's important for me to eat healthily. I don't care enough about it to do a great job at it. So I think the challenge is, how do we get people to care enough about the way they're listening to change it? And so sometimes I'm at a good place now, because I don't work with any companies or seek any companies unless they're seeking me out. At my stage of my life, I've given up trying to persuade or convince people who need you, but they don't want to hear what you have to say. But this is one of the ways that I pivot people, and that causes them to care. And you'll see why it would work. I would say to people, I'd like you to think of someone who really cares about you, your success, believes in you, has your back. Raise your hand if you can think of that person. And most people can raise their hand and think of that person. And then I would say, if you were to ask that person, what would be the positive impact on my success, my happiness, and our relationship if I became a better listener? Little, moderate, large. And most of them will say moderate, but that's the tee up for the gotcha question. I say, oh, that's good to know. If you were to ask that same person, what has been the negative impact that's already happened on my success, happiness, and our relationship when I have been at my absolute worst as a listener? The answer is always large, and they get a flashback of all the times they interrupted people, all the times they had to one-up people, all the times they seemed to blow people off. But that seemed to be helpful in getting them to care. And when I've developed rapport or trust with the audience, I will start calling out people, or if they're at tables, if it's a large conference, I'll say, why don't you share some of those things? Because to be honest, I'm not going to try and convince you of the positive effects and the protective effects of your being a better listener. And so when they're able to do that, there's humor, and then it's, but you can see people, you can feel the room flex into, they're sort of chuckling, because what they're realizing is when they're at their worst, they're all terrible listeners.
Hey, listeners, I want to tell you about another company that I run called Content Callout. It is a thought leadership brand marketing company. Now, what does that mean? It means that we take you as an executive or entrepreneur, a leader of a small or medium-sized business, and we turn you into a thought leader online. We take your personal brand and we amp it up to 11. So that you can lead with confidence, knowing that people will recognize you, recognize your brand, and recognize your business because of the thought leadership approach that you've taken on social media through content creation and content distribution, as well as engaging with all of your following. online. How do you get involved in this? Easy, easy, easy. Just go to contentcallout.com/get-started, and you will see there three different options that will allow you to take your thought leadership brand for yourself and for your business to the next level. We are super excited to talk to you about this. We've seen some massive growth with the businesses that we've been working with. Very, very exciting time for us. Look at that. We appreciate it. Now back to your show. One of the things that you speak about, and I think this sort of speaks to what you just mentioned, is something called the magic paradox. You're speaking to these people to influence, and you're trying to be a better listener, but you can sense that the counterparty isn't potentially getting it, quote unquote, getting it, or there's some sort of disconnect that may exist between you two. You haven't reached level three or level four. I'm jumping all over in your books right now, but you haven't reached level three or level four listening. And you talk about this question called the magic paradox, which I think is amazing. Could you tell the listeners what the magic paradox is designed for and how it could potentially connect two or more people when they're negotiating something or having a discussion about something?
Well, the magic paradox is when you're picking up resistance and the other side may not be able to have the words and they may not feel comfortable enough to say no, or I've heard enough, but they're thinking it. You can see that they're getting edgy and fidgety.
Yes.
And so the way the magic paradox would work is when you pick that up, the tendency, if you're a little bit, you know, junior, is you feel the anxiety that the sale or the negotiation is going to get away. And so the tendency is that anxiety pushes you to drive harder, which kills the deal completely. And one of the ways you can, and here's the latest way on how you can flip someone around. And these are three steps. If you do this, this will be, I think, the best thing that I share today, although you're pulling out some pretty good stuff, Mark. Thank you. But imagine this. You're in a negotiation and you've been there before and you get a sense in your gut that they're nodding, but they're just nodding to be polite. They're nodding, but the horse has left the barn in terms of they're wanting to buy something from you. So the way the magic paradox would work then is, you know, they're just expecting when they can get the signal to be able to end the conversation. And instead, what you say to them is, I'd like to pause for a second. And they're going to go, what? Because they're going to go, what? Because apparently you've caught them being tuned out to you. And even though they wanted to be polite, they've caught you. And you say, I'd like to pause for a second. They go, huh? And then this is exactly what you say. I just put myself in your shoes. And when I was in your shoes, I asked myself, if I was you, what you were listening for from this conversation. And what I realized that what you're listening for from this conversation has nothing to do with anything we've already talked about. And they're going to go, what? Yeah, you know, I put myself in your shoes and I could see you were nodding politely, but the nodding politely was a signal to me that you were politely saying, you know, I was listening for something else and it hasn't come up. And so you do an assumptive close there. And so instead of saying, is that true? You say, so what might that be that you were listening for that we haven't talked about? And they'll tell you what that is. And then there's something that I talk about in Just Listen called conversation deepeners. And a conversation deepener means that when people use hyperbole, like awful, amazing, terrific, or their voice goes up, that has emotional juice on it. So when they tell you what they were listening for, and if they use the word awful, amazing, let them finish what they were saying. And you say, say more about the amazing. And they're going to go, what? Yeah, say more about the amazing. Say more about the terrible. And what you're going to feel is they're opening up more and more to you than they would in a pure transaction. And then as they open up, they're going to be more open to the conversation going even deeper. And then you say, thank you for letting me know what you're listening for. Help me to understand why that's important. And then they'll share more about that. And then you do some more conversation deepeners and to get them to open up more and more. And then the clincher, and this time it becomes rather personal because they've opened up in ways they've never opened up to a salesperson, negotiator. And again, you got to try to cultivate the tone I'm using. I'm using in my NPR FM invite you to speak tone as opposed to my AM sportscaster tone. So you're inviting them to open up more and more. And the clincher is to say, what's really going on? They're going to go, what? Yeah, you know, you've told me what you were listening for, why it's important, but what's really going on? And something you can use, not in all situations, but you can keep this in your back pocket. And they may hem and haw, and something you can suggest, but use it selectively because you don't want to be wrong. You could say, you know, I've had these conversations before with other people. And when I asked them what was really going on, can I tell you what they told me? And by this point, they're hopefully going to be intrigued. And what you say to them is, what I've heard from other people on really what's going on is they'll tell me, I need a win. I need some wins because I've had some losses. There's a lot of pressure on me to have some wins. There's a lot of pressure on me to make some numbers, and I'm not doing so well. And I don't know if you can relate to that, but that is such a universal thing because let's face it, you need wins if you're negotiating and selling anything. They need wins to show that, especially if it's B2B, that they're going to buy something that their boss says, that was a great purchase. Boy, get us more stuff. Oh, that was good. And what they're afraid of is the boss is going to say, why did you buy that piece of junk that we can't use? And then if you get them on the hook, you can say, tell me what that looks like. Tell me what a win would look like. Now, one of the things I do, there's something that I call the Miracle on 34th Street sale. And I become a bit of a legend in it because what would happen is I would open people up and I could even see that they'd want to buy from me. And I'd say, you know, I have a feeling I could close this deal, but you shouldn't buy what I'm selling. And they go, why? Because what you've revealed tells me that you or your company need to do three other things before you buy what I'm selling. And they go, what? And you name whatever they are. You become a student of their success and you name what they are. And you could say, look, check those things out internally. Or if you want, I have people that I can refer to you and I'm not getting a referral fee. I'm here to help you be successful. And what people used to say when I'd have these visits, because I heard it back, people would tell me, someone said, you know, I was speaking to someone at this company and said, when's the last time you ran into someone who drove 3 hours to sell you something that they could have sold and told you not to buy? And sometimes they'll say to me, even in the conversation, why are you doing this? I said, because I'm selling you something much more valuable than my service and product. I just sold you on trust, which means I can come back to you. But I'm only going to come back to you if I discover things or if I run into other people, you know, who might help you to be successful. That's how I roll in this world.
Can't tell you how many notes are going to come out of this from all of our listeners. If the listeners don't have 5 pages of notes, I'd be shocked. What I love about the magic paradox and that list of questions that you start off, that whole strategy, is that it really bubbles emotions to the surface. When you talk about make the other person feel felt, when you spoke about that at the beginning, I think that that line of questions really helps the other party to say, this person actually cares, right? Like this person's actually listening to me. And that makes them feel more valuable. And when they feel more valuable and you get into the trust conversation, then everything else becomes much easier. I love how that bubbles the emotions to the surface, because once you can understand the emotions or at least get them to share what they feel, then the sale and the influence becomes significantly easier. Because I feel like a lot of people are trying to sell on logic or reputation, which is great, but they're missing a big piece of the puzzle, which is the emotional aspect of it.
So here's another tip that people, I can say it on your show, that they can take to the bank, not just in their career, but they might get lucky at home tonight. And it's called the HUVA exercise, H-U-V-A. And the way you do it is every day, if there's a conversation that you have the intention of having a meaningful impact and wanting to be more present. And what present means is you didn't turn the other person off or away. And so what you're going to do, and this will be a stretch if you don't have the highest emotional intelligence or whatever, but you can learn these skills. And what HOOVA stands for is, first of all, you pick up the question in your mind, who's the person that I want to have this great conversation with? You have the conversation, and then you grade yourself after the conversation from their point of view. Mm-hmm. So you ask yourself, on a scale of 1 to 10, how much did they feel that I heard them out? That's the H. Or did I interrupt them? Did I change the subject? Was I throwing in things that just didn't follow up what they were saying? And so, scale of 1 to 10, did they feel heard out? The U, how well did they feel understood? On a scale of 1 to 10, and they feel understood if you ask them questions to elaborate, because you're trying to find out what really matters to them. V is, how much did they feel valued at what they said? And that would mean that not only were you listening intently, but you were able to show and demonstrate value back to them of what they were saying that they may not have even known was valuable. And then the final A is, how much did you add value to what they said? And that might be something in which you say, have you ever thought of doing this with such and such? Like, I have my own podcast called My Wake Up Call. And one of the ways I build trust, and I'm up to about 158 episodes, is as I'll listen intently to people, I'll say, have you ever thought of writing a book? Sometimes they say yes. I say, well, that's good, because here's the book title. This is who you are. And these are my guests, and they're taking notes. So, but that's adding value. Or they'll share something, and I might say, have you ever thought of applying what you just said to a different situation, this situation? But if you do that exercise, and don't beat up on yourself if you discover you're lousy at this, this doesn't come natural, because it really means letting go, literally, of your agenda and really leaning in. But if you do that once a day, things will shift in your life. And I mean everywhere in your life. I mean even in your personal life.
This is what you talk about, like moving from transactional to transformational questions, right?
Absolutely.
I think that that's probably the most scary part for a lot of people, because there's this weird sense of control that I think that people desire to have in negotiations. And if they ask these transactional questions, then they get the yes-no response. It actually doesn't give you any information other than yes-no to the transactional question. There's so much value that's lost by not asking the transformational question. And so what ends up happening is you almost gloss over potential opportunities for making significantly more money or creating significantly more value than if you had asked the transformational questions. But it's a scary leap, I think, for a lot of people, because they're so used to, you know, the paint by numbers approach of ask this question, get a response, ask the next question, get a response. And it really requires a much deeper sense of curiosity. And so my question, maybe to close off our conversation, is how do we develop, or can we develop, a deeper sense of curiosity?
Feeling is believing. And so I think when you've had the experience of someone caring about you, dropping their agenda, in fact, when someone without any agenda in mind picks up something from us and they say, are you okay? But they're saying it from a point of caring, it's transformational to you. So in my book, Just Listen, I think you'll remember this anecdote, and I think it's a good one to close on. I was having difficulty getting an appointment with a CEO. He was really busy, and I finally got to see him. And there I am, and I'm talking with him, and he's restless. He seems agitated. And again, because I'm not working for a big company that, you know, where my boss would say, you did what? But, you know, I'm a hostage negotiation trainer and a suicide specialist. So I'm, you know, I'm a little bit agile on my feet. And I picture this. I looked at him, and he was like a big footballer, you know, with all these trophies behind him. And so picture this. You're him. He's agitated. And I said, hey, how much time you got for me? He goes, what? I said, yeah, you look on your calendar. How much time you got for me? And he got really ticked. And he looked and he said, 20 minutes. And I had 20 seconds before he was going to throw me out. And I said, here's the deal. We're into minute 3. And there's something more important on your mind than talking to me. And I'm guessing it's more important than anything you'll do the rest of the day. So here's the deal. Let's stop now, but you take the remaining 17 minutes and you take care of whatever's on your mind, because you're not here. you're not here with me and you're probably not here. And we don't have to reschedule. If I've been rude, you know, throw me out, but do take the remaining time and take care of that. And he looks at me and his eyes tear up. And I figure, oh, I said to myself, Mark, you're not supposed to make people cry in the corporate world. Come on, come on. And he's tearing up and he says, you've known me for 3 minutes and I'm really private. And there's people 30 yards from where we are who don't know what you know. Yes, something is up. My wife's having a biopsy and it doesn't look good. And my wife said, you go to work. And I said, well, clearly you're not here. Go be with her. And then he shook his whole body like a St. Bernard dog coming in from the rain. He went, and then he got centered and he looked at me because he was appreciative of what I saw. And he said, I'm not as strong as my wife, but I'm pretty strong. You know, I did a couple tours and such war. He said, and you've got my undivided attention and you've got your full 20 minutes.
Powerful. Very, very powerful.
Now, a lot of people thinking, I can't do that. Yes, you can. It's you're picking up cues. And so what happens, oh, and by the way, it shouldn't surprise you, you know, it turned out okay with a wife, but this guy and I now are lifelong friends. You want to convince someone? You want to make a deal? Well, it's nice to be lifelong friends with a top CEO. But that's the power of letting go of your agenda and caring about where they're coming from.
I love it. Fantastic. Mark, if people want to follow you online and follow your work, how do they do that?
Well, you can go to markgoulston.com, but I have a new LinkedIn live stream show. You're going to be a guest on it, and it's called No Strings Attached. And here's how I listened into LinkedIn, and you can tell me whether I got it right. I like to think of where are people coming from? And I could get this wrong, although it's already picking up speed. I said, what are the people on LinkedIn listening for? I said, superficially, they're listening for and looking for a deal, looking how to get hired, looking how to sell something. And I said, but I think down deep, LinkedIn is experiencing transaction fatigue. Everybody's hitting on you, people you don't know.
Totally agree.
People are congratulating you on your work anniversary. Yesterday, I got 50 congratulations on my work anniversary, and I can't find, you know, I do so many things, what it's the anniversary of. I'm going to go back to them and say, you know, what should I be celebrating? I don't know these people. And I thought, I think what they're listening for is a cell-free zone. And so no strings attached, my guests and I, and I'm telling my guests, and so far, everybody I've reached out to in my other podcast, my wake-up call, which people might like, and there's been 155 episodes. I said, I'm doing this broadcast. Here's the deal. If you come on as a guest, you give away your best tip or tool and you can't upsell anything. End humbly by saying, I hope, you know, what we've shared will help someone somewhere, Mark. Thanks for having me on. And if people want to find me, they can find me on LinkedIn. So let's support the platform. But there's none of this upsell like, well, you know, Mark, if people contact me today, they can get 50% off of this. And if they do this, I have this free. No, 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 no. There's no strings attached. Plus, if anyone wants to build a course, monetize whatever they give away, and this is true for whatever I give away, I've given away things that people could create sales courses from, even on this call. If you want to create a course, you want to monetize it, you don't owe me anything, and you don't even have to attribute it to me. I mean, I'd like you to attribute it to me, but it's no strings attached. And I got to tell you, Mark, this mindset that I have, because I'm doing this for 45 years, I've given you a few little nuggets. I think I have 150 of these little things that I've dropped in your show. And it is so freeing to just give stuff away and not worry about, should I get an NDA? And what's my business funnel? Yada, yada, yada. And I'm having a time of my life just sharing everything I've learned.
Outstanding. For the listeners, just so that you know, I'll make sure to link out to all of Mark's resources online, as well as his show, which is fantastic, by the way, and his LinkedIn live show. Mark, it's been a real privilege, man. I feel like you and I could talk about this stuff for ages. I mean, we didn't even get into 90% of the stuff that I had planned for today, but that's great. That means there's going to be future shows. So listen, thank you so much for being on. Thank you for sharing your wisdom, and we really appreciate you.
Well, thank you. And if this tickles people's fancy, you know, we can do a Q&A. If you say, hey, did you like what Mark had to say? I mean, read some of his stuff. We'll, you know, send in some questions. We'll do another show. By the way, for the live stream show, to find it all together, if you go to LinkedIn, search under Mark Goulston Restream. Mark Goulston Restream when you get into LinkedIn, because that shows all the shows archived. Otherwise, it seems like they're all over my LinkedIn page and it's tough to find them.
You're a good man, sir. We appreciate it. Thank you so much for being on.
I appreciate you, Mark. Thank you for giving me a long leash.
Hey, friends, thanks so much for listening to this episode. If you enjoyed it, please share it with friends and colleagues so that they can benefit from it as well. If you find Negotiations Ninja Podcast worthy, please go on to iTunes and give us a cool rating with a nice review. We certainly appreciate every single one that we get because it helps us to understand who is listening, how they're listening, and what it is they like. If there's something that you would like me to discuss around negotiation, influence, or persuasion, give me a shout. You know how to reach me on social media, or you can get me on my website, which is www.negotiations.ninja.